All right, everybody. Well, we can go ahead and get started. We're going to start with a roll call. Myself, I'm obviously here, Kyle. Tim has an excused absence tonight. I have not seen Simone yet. Hopefully she comes in. Jason, I saw you're here. Derek, hopefully he comes in. He's not here yet. Joe is here. I saw Kim was here. Mike is here. And Ruben is here. So we can move on to approval of the minutes. Amber, you guys should have all received the email from Amber last week with the meeting minutes from last, I guess it was December meeting. It's been a while. So can we get an approval of the meeting minutes or any discussion on those if we need it?
I move that we accept the minutes as presented.
Okay, thanks, Joe. And a second?
A second.
All right, thank you guys. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right, perfect. Easy part done. Now on to the fun stuff. Chair. We have two open positions now. We have the chair and the co-chair positions. They are two-year terms. I'm going to open up with the chair position. So any nominations? I have one. I'd like to nominate Jason Presser for chair. Any other nominations for chair?
I was planning on nominating you, Kyle.
See, I beat you to the punch. I had a succession plan in place. So, Jason, do you accept the nomination for chair since there are no other nominees?
Yeah, I'll accept.
Thank you.
Thought about throwing you a curveball
Yeah, last second change of heart. All right. Do we need to vote on it? I'm not real clear on the, there's only one nominee, or is it just by acclamation?
I believe it actually, I was looking at the bylaws earlier today, actually. I believe this needs a simple majority vote. So that would be, we have 9 members. We would
Okay.
need 5 to say yay.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none. Congratulations, Jason. Okay. Vice Chair, I will open up the nominations and would like to nominate Joe Zimmerman to Vice Chair. Any other nominees for Vice Chair? Not seeing any. Joe, do you accept the nomination as Vice Chair?
I will accept, yes.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. All in favor is Joe Zimmerman as vice chair. Aye.
Aye.
All right. Thank you. Congratulations, Joe.
Thank you.
All right. Moving on. We have section 3 of our agenda. We have updates. The first update looks like we have Clark County Public Health Solid Waste. Once again, Amber sent out a abbreviated update in the email. Amber, is there anything to add to that abbreviated update, or does any staff from Solid Waste have anything to add for the Clark County Solid Waste update?
No, all that is good. However, if you don't mind me saying, now that we have officially started the meeting, Brian was unable to join us tonight. He did have a brief presentation scheduled for tonight's meeting. So that will either be moved to the next meeting or possibly sent out in an email.
Okay. I did have one question. I'm not sure who I would direct it to on solid waste, but do we have any update where we are on a new head of our solid waste program?
Unfortunately, at the moment, we do not have any update on that.
Okay. There is no update. That's the update. Okay. Solid waste enforcement. We should have also received in the email a copy of the solid waste quarterly report, but Melissa, do you have anything you'd like to add to that?
I do. I'm trying to share my screen. Great. Please.
Yep, it's coming up now.
All right.
And we can see it.
Okay. From the beginning. It's a little slow to start. So I will just try to go through very briefly. For the solid waste enforcement, we have requested additional funds for our LSWFA grant. We have an anticipated shortfall for Q7 and Q8 of our grant biennium. This is a frequent reoccurrence since the general what's allocated for the grants just doesn't quite cover our needs for Clark County solid waste enforcement. The amount that we've requested is $36,214, and Laura has notified us that once Ecology has received unused funds from other municipalities, they will award that amount, and the funds will be disseminated to the counties. We're hoping that this will happen soon, since our report is currently locked, and so we're not able to submit our quarterly report until that's been completed on Ecology's end and that we've accepted the new term. So once that's done, we will submit our quarterly report via Eagle. That's why this time it looked a little bit different than what you guys normally get. For solid waste enforcement, I decided this time just to do a little recap of 2022 year in review. There were 45 permitted facility inspections, 18 exempt facility inspections. So those include all of our recycling facilities, facilities that stockpile concrete, asphalt, et cetera. We had two new facilities come on board in 2022. One, you all know, the City of Battleground Stormwater Decant Facility went through the permitting process. Thank you all for your efforts on that. And then also from an exempt facility, Paper People. They are a paper recycling company. They relocated to a new facility in 2022. So they had to go through the process again for their new facility. And then we did have one exemption modification submitted for Section 30 PIT, but that was submitted January of last year, and they still have not come into compliance with City of Vancouver's stormwater requirements. So until they're able to do that, they will not be able to accept yard debris, which they had added to their plan as a proposal. We received 153 complaints and resolved 151 in 2022. Some exciting news. We've been contacted by Washington State Department of Transportation. They are interested in seeking a solid waste handling permit for a Salmon Creek stockpile pit. They are planning to segregate, dewater, stockpile, sample, and screen ditching and stormwater sediments. And they have in their plan that they've submitted that it would exclude street sweeping and vector solids. So part of my plan review is to say, what are you going to do with that material? But that's what their plan that they've submitted has said that this facility will handle. Their facility will handle only materials generated by WashDOT activities on highway right-of-ways, generally a mixture of sand, soil, pine needles, twigs, litters, et cetera, from solid waste, from WashDOT's right-of-way. They're planning on storing it on a 6-inch thick, 9,600 square foot asphalt storage pad that is enclosed on three sides with Ecology blocks. They're estimating about 2,000 cubic yards annually of material, with a maximum of 1,000 cubic yards, and they anticipate about 30 truckloads a month during the summer. This is just a really rough overview. Of course, if they submit a solid waste permit, we'll have a more formal process, but I just wanted to give you guys a little bit of a heads up what's coming down the pike. So the proposed site is in the apex of where I-5 and 205 meet, kind of up near exit 7 in Salmon Creek. You can see to the south is 134th, which is the old, kind of the old school thoroughfare. For those of you who kind of are familiar with this area, there's Burgerville and a Burger King over here, but they have this access point. So this is their pretty map that they submitted to us with their plan. This here is 134th Street. They have a roadway access point coming in. They have their proposed pad will be here. They have an existing pond here. I will be transparent in that my concern is that their proposed plan is that the pad will accept the waste and it will pond and drain into this existing pond that that daylights to, I believe, Whipple Creek. So I have had communications with Washington State Department of Ecology Clean Water Program. It sounds like at the way the regulations are currently written in the guidance document that they should be able to move forward with this activity, but there may be changes to that in the future, and so we'll have to address that at a later time, but just in full transparency. Again, it's very cursory, very early stages, and I'm not sure, you know, we haven't gotten an official application, so it's all just in proposal at this point. Just kind of some tentative heads up on how the process works and where we're at. We are currently, Ecology and myself, Derek Rocket, we're currently reviewing a draft operations plan. Once the details have been vetted, WashDOT will submit a formal application. I would hope that could be as early as March 1st. I don't anticipate it being sooner than March 1st, but if all things go well, that's kind of the timelines I've tried to put in here for you. Once they've submitted a formal application, I will review it, deem it, once it's deemed complete, meaning that the CEPA has been reviewed, they have land use approval, they meet all of the terms and conditions of permit application per WAC 173-350. Once we did deem it complete, which could happen on or about March 21st, at that point, Public Health will prepare documents and distribute it for a 15-day multi-agency review process. That could happen between March 27th and April 10th. Once we get those comments back, we'll kind of set up the website just like we did before, get everything set up, try to dial in for a public comment period. If all things went well, hopefully we could get that done in about a week and a half, and we could have a public comment period maybe April 21st through May 22nd. We have to legally advertise it before SWAC. The code says 10 days prior notice, but we generally give 30 days just to ensure that the public has adequate time for review and comment. We'll send written notice to properties within 300 feet before the SWAC meeting as well. Given that it's a commercial site and it's surrounded by a lot of commercial sites, CCPH may elect to voluntarily extend the notification to 500 feet from the subject property. I tried to do that on GIS for this presentation, but it wasn't really working since the sites are not addressed or identified as valid sites on GIS, so it was a little tricky. So all of that being said, I would say at the earliest, we may need a tentative SWAC special session on June 1st to have a public hearing for their permit. But again, you know, without them having submitted and not knowing when they're planning to submit or where they are with the CEPA review and all of those kinds of things, these are all really speculative, but just kind of giving you a roundabout timeline. Ecology must approve or disapprove a complete solid waste permit application within 90 days once it's determined that the application is complete. So should we deem it complete on or about March 21st, we would need to either approve or deny the permit on June 19th. So that's why I have there the June 1st potential SWAC. This is kind of just the regular permits verbiage from our code about the 10 days, just so if you wanted to see where that all comes from, that it would be in writing and you don't have to go looking anything up. And that's everything.
Quick question for you. I have one.
Yeah.
Just so I kind of have a better understanding of what they're doing. It's not technically a decant facility like the Battleground one. They're just going to be dumping stuff there and then it dries out and then they haul it away. Is that kind of what that's what I'm picturing in my mind.
Yes. It's a little confusing. I'm reading through the plan and a lot of their plan currently reads that they will stockpile the material there and then they'll take it to Whatley Pit. So my thought is, why don't you just take it to Whatley Pit? Why have your own solid waste handling permit?
That's kind of where my confusion is. I'm like, what exactly are they going to be doing with it? Just letting it sit there for a while and then moving it? Okay, yeah. If that's what you want to do, I guess, but it seems weird.
Right. So I'm not sure why they would want a solid waste handling permit to take it to another interim handling facility. So in my initial response to them will be that they need to make arrangements for final disposal of that material. They are hopeful that they will be able to test the material and that it will be clean enough that they will be able to reutilize the material in other projects, wash dot projects, whether that be medians or road base. However, what I've seen from testing at the Whatley Pit material, I don't know that it's as likely as they think that it may be. And I'm trying to be candid in my comments that they may want to seek counsel from Whatley Pit, where they currently take material, to see if it's really viable. A lot of our facilities, Whatley Pit Decant Facility, Washougal Decant Facility, and City of Battleground, their solids will go to disposal. They'll test them only to make sure that they meet the criteria for disposal at a landfill, but not for reuse purposes.
Yeah, I remember talking about the Battleground one. You were saying that a lot of that stuff is pretty contaminated when it comes out of the storm drains and things like that. So.
Right. So while I would love for there to be another facility in another location that this material can be taken, and there is a need for that. I don't know that this particular site really, I mean, it's only for WashDOT, so it's only for their materials. I don't know if it somehow minimizes traffic or truck transit for them. I'm not quite certain. I will push back for them to find a final disposal site for that it not go back to Whatley. And I am concerned that part of their plan says specifically that it will not include vector waste or street sweepings. Why would you have a solid waste handling facility that you're paying a pretty substantial permit fee for and to not take that other materials that you know that you already generate? So I don't know fully those answers yet. We're still in the very cursory review, but that's really why we do a draft review plan, so that we can kind of vet all of that and not be within that concrete 90-day window to try to button down all of those gaps.
Melissa, I was wondering, could I ask a question real quick?
Certainly.
Yeah. I realize... You know, this is just their proposal, if you will. Does it sound like, or do you happen to know of any talk of a secondary location or a backup plan to this? I know that location to me, and you mentioned the elephant in the room, as they say, that's right next to a pond. The pond drains, straight down the hill to Salmon Creek. And so, I don't have huge reservations, but I've got reservations. I guess I'm just sitting there going, I can think of a whole bunch of better places that might work better than that little chunk of land there next to the off ramp on 205 southbound, does it sound like they might have a backup to it?
It does not. They have reached out to public health on numerous occasions. I would say about every 6 months since late 2018, early 2019, that they want to do this. they don't have the funding. They want to do this. They're ready to do this. Oh, they don't have the funding. They're going to break ground. They're ready for their NOI. And I say, no, it's not an exempt facility. It's a permitted facility. Oh, wait, we're not ready for that then. So then.
I'm sorry to interrupt you real quick here, but so they must be doing something with this material currently. What are they currently doing? Do we know?
They take it currently to Whatley Pit.
And the difference would be now they're going to store it for a while and still take it to Whatley Pit.
That is what they propose. However, I will have them to find a disposal location for it.
Okay.
Again, their plan is very hopeful that they will be able to reutilize and repurpose a lot of this material. That is their plan.
Ah, okay. Okay.
But they're not testing that material currently, so they don't know where that lies on, and testing it to meet MACTA standards with their individual piles is going to be quite expensive.
Okay. Okay. That, I guess that kind of makes sense. It's, maybe they're, you know, currently disposing of film, of decent film material. But they just don't know right now, what the toxicity level would be, I guess is what we're saying, huh?
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. But, and also the concerns about going to the creek, you know, with the eventual outfall, I have brought that concern with Derek Rocket at Ecology. We have brought that to the attention of the clean water folks at Ecology. But I think that the way that the regulations or the guidance documents are currently written, I think it will be allowed. I think they may be revisiting those guidance documents to perhaps close that loophole in the future. And I've talked with, I would have to have support and blessing from Alan Melnick and also Brian Schlottman and my supervisor, Kimberly, and SWAC when it gets to that point, but to perhaps add additional restrictions in the permit that, you know, should that be updated in the future, that they would have 12 months to come into compliance with future guidance documents or something like that. It's kind of my cursory thought. Again, I haven't delved into the complete plan review and seen, you know, how it all works out, but those are my initial thinking through the what my concern as looking as both public health employee and also as a citizen of our community and what the concerns of our citizens are and trying to be mindful of that as well.
Right. Well, actually all it takes, I'm starting to get more and more involved in the county and you know, some county active groups and whatnot. I'm finding that all it takes is three letters, DNS. That took me a while to figure out what DNS stood for, and then all of a sudden it makes sense now. So
So, but I will, in the formal plan review process, or, you know, once they submit their application, it's deemed complete through the multi-agency review, I will request a letter from Ecology's Clean Water folks that they, you know, give their blessing or, you know, they're in agreement with this plan and any concerns or reservations that they would have, to make sure that you all as SWAC members have that information when you review the permit. So, but I want to be transparent in the whole process and let you know where we are and what they're proposing. It's, again, very early. And we're just really in the initial phases. But once they submit that application formally, it's a really quick smushed together timeline. So I just want to make sure that everyone's on board. Any other questions or concerns or anything I can shed light on?
All right. Thanks, Melissa.
Appreciate I do have that. An unrelated comment or just related to the first part of your talk there. And that was just that on that money, we are still waiting for some counties to return their deobligating funds with signatures. So if you want to talk to those counties and encourage them to get their signed amendments back, then I'll let you know. You can ask me on the side, and I'll let you know who to talk to.
Maybe I'll put our environmental health director in touch with their environmental health directors.
That sounds good. Yeah, if you want to do that, just let me know.
yeah, if you want to shoot me an email with those counties, I'll be happy to chat with Brian and Kimberly and get on that. Super. Thank you, Laura.
All right. Next up on our agenda, we have Julie. Hi, Julie. From City Vancouver.
Good evening, Slack members, and Happy New Year, even though it's February and Groundhog's Day. It's a pleasure to be with you this evening. I'll try and keep my updates brief. And I might be repetitive from our December meeting, but just high-level updates. In December of last year, our council approved a resolution to adopt a climate action framework. And I mentioned that for Slack members as previous questions about that plan. It's available on our website, and in my notes to Amber, I'll include links to the – excuse me, it's a framework, not a plan. But that will keep us busy into the future as staff work on implementing elements, specifically related to solid waste or with a nexus to solid waste at the city. In addition, our council adopted a compost procurement ordinance, which was required, to be effective January 1 of this year, under the new organics management law, or what some SOC members might know was formerly referred to as HB 1799. So the organics management law has many parts, and the first timeline specific was for jurisdictions of Vancouver qualified based on our size and our offering of organics service curbside to adopt a compost procurement ordinance. And so in the first and second quarter of this year, we're working on implementing the next steps necessary to have a compost policy and use, and then tracking and reporting to ecology will come eventually. And then in January, we had new service rates for garbage and recycling services go into effect. So adjustments or increases in rates for our customers, with a one-time buy-down in the recycling collection cost to keep rates for our typical single-family customer down to no more than 6.6% for a typical Vancouver customer. And then in early January, our council also adopted new zoning and development code, which for solid waste, we have a section that applies to new multifamily, commercial development, narrow lot developments, and a new style of housing we call cottage cluster. It's just denser housing. And with all of that, the intent is to have code for any type of development that is built in the city that is new or significantly remodeled going through a site plan review process, that they have solid waste infrastructure in place, meaning that there's design and intent for solid waste services, collection access. It's trying to get ahead of what we see on the proactive side of needing to plan for solid waste and not letting it be an afterthought or forgotten in a new development. And then we successfully wrapped up our regional leaves coupon program. So that's a program that Vancouver leads through an agreement with Clark County for leaf coupon disposal for free for all residents in the region. And happy to report similar numbers as previous years, a little less tons brought in, but it was, if you can remember, a little bit drier at the beginning of the year or the beginning of the coupon season in October. And holistically, about 63% of the coupons redeemed were from county residents, and the remaining 37% were from Vancouver residents. And we spent about $173,000 in disposal associated with, let me see if I can get a total. Apologize. I don't have a quick summary in front of me of the, total cubic yards is 15,446 cubic yards diverted. And that is, again, an offering to keep leaves from falling in storm drains, clogging storm drains, or prevent localized flooding in streets, but also provide resources for diversion, giving people an opportunity to divert rather than dispose of as garbage or burn. So any questions for me at this time? Seeing none. All right. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Julie. Waste Connections. Derek. Hi, Derek.
Sorry, I took a minute to get my mute button undone there. Thanks for having me again tonight. Waste Connections-wise, on the collection side, this is kind of rolling into the quiet time of year for us, but coming out of December, we did have one weather event this year. Luckily, it was a one-day event, which was nice, but did prevent service for customers on that one day, which we asked to double up. On the following day of service, it was over the holiday, which was never a great story for for customers, but we're thankful it was only one day and we made it through the weather safely with our group. You know, we're always concerned about our big trucks on icy streets. It's never a good situation. So, let's see, hauling wise, yeah, not a lot going on the hauling side. Transfer stations, same sort of thing. You know, we're seeing volumes down about 1 to 2% year over year. So, you know, likely kind of ongoing slowdowns in the economy. We're seeing traffic volumes pretty good, but overall tonnage has definitely come down. And then also we're seeing employment pick up, which is nice. So we're filling a lot of open positions. We have probably been about 10% short on our driver force for the last 18 to 24 months. And that's presented a lot of challenge for us. But those positions are actually filling up now. So we're catching up pretty quickly. I think we had 6 new drivers start this week. And we're hoping to fill some of the rest of them as we head into the new year. Big projects we do have coming up. We have the automation of the remaining county customers in the urban growth portions of the county. So that's going to be about 45,000 homes. We will provide them garbage carts, and they will be able to set that out for service as soon as they get them. We're going to probably start rolling that out in May or probably in May. It kind of depends on when our trucks get in. We've ordered 13 new trucks to cover those routes, and that'll allow us to move from a two-man throw the can in the back of the truck situation to a fully automated system, and that'll mean that the entirety of the county will be fully automated at that point, which would be nice. So we're excited about that. It'll take probably 6 weeks for us to do it. We're thinking that our cart vendor can do 2 routes per week to swap them out, but we do have to cover 13 routes. You're looking at a 6 to 7 week rollout, depending on what's going on. A few other notes. We did, I think since the last time we talked, we finished up our in Waste Connections employee bike build, which is an annual tradition that we do. So we were able to build almost 1,000 bikes and donate them to charities throughout Clark County, which is a great event. Our employees all participate on a Friday night, and then we do a community build on Saturday and spread it out. It was a lot of fun. Santa Claus was there both days, and it was a good time. So Joe Zimmerman is the best roper in the county. I'd like to say that. We held our employee appreciation party this last Saturday at the Hilton. We had about 700 members of Waste Connections family there. We do a big event every year where we bring all of our employees in the Portland, Vancouver area together, and actually all the way out to the landfills come in for it. And we had a Western theme this year, had a band. It was great, a lot of fun, good way to treat our employees. Joe Zimmerman was the guest lasso artist. He taught our employees how to lasso, and he did a fantastic job. I think Joe will not be allowed back in the Hilton, if I understand correctly. But
Derek, it sounds like I was probably the third or fourth person they tried to line up, and I want to say about a week and a half's notice is all I got. Because they had called the saddle club, they'd called another guy, I remember, they finally were down to, hey, well, let's call Busy Farms. And just so that everybody's clear, I left a pile of straw in the main ballroom of the Hilton, and I felt so bad. I've already sent your Tina. I already sent her an email apologizing. I don't know what they said to her, but it must not have been good, because I felt so bad, because I was going, you know, a professional person would have, like, you know, a sawhorse or something like that. We don't. We just have the bale of straw with a plastic head stuck on it. And I'm going, I brought what I had, you know.
It was perfect. It was great. Joe did a great job. Joe and his wife did a great job, and I think our employees really enjoyed it. So it was one of our events. And safer than the bull riding competition. I think that's about it on our end. It's, you know, like I said, it's kind of a slow time of year, so we kind of start prepping for summer, prepping for big projects for the busy season, and getting things in order.
One question for you, Derek. With the automated cart rollouts, what do people generally do with their old cans? Do they just have you guys haul them and toss them, or they keep them themselves? Is there any? Do you have any idea of what they generally do with them?
We recommend that people save them for use as, you know, extras, so, you know, holiday volumes, whatever, they can put it out, put their bags in. It's a better way to put your material at the curb, so they can put their extras in there. Our driver will dump their cart, then use the can, put the can into the cart, or put the material from the can in the cart and then dump that, so it kind of contains a little better than plastic bags being on the side. We also, they're great for yard debris, great for around the house. So we really push the reuse aspect of it and retain them. We do get customers that just say, just take it and throw it away for us. So we'll do that for them as well. They have to let us know that they want to do that. Otherwise, we expect that they're going to retain the cart and want to keep it. So.
And what's the method for that? Do you have people just put like a note on it, or is it generally like a, they have to contact the service, customer service, or what's the way?
I don't know yet on this one. We'll have to figure that out, because this is a, you know, we're touching a lot of homes on this one at 45,000. Yeah. We have not finalized our communication strategies on it. So I'll have to see, you know, last summer we obviously got inundated during the rollout of the day changes. This one's a little simpler because the day changes have already occurred. The routes aren't changing. We're really just swapping out the can for the cart. So the communication won't be as extensive. So there, we may just recommend that people call us. We always are recommending people use the website, do email, all sorts of different methods to contact us. But if they want to call us, they can do that as well. But we'll get that out in some form of a mail or communication here soon.
Okay. Thanks. I just know people have questions about that when that time rolls around. So thanks for your update. Appreciate it. Any other questions for Derek? All right. We can move on to item 4, which is our chapter 6 of the Solid Waste Management Plan, and Jessica, and we are seeking a formal vote on this, so just so SWAC members are aware. Hi, Jessica. Welcome.
Hi. Let me get my slides in order. I should be really quick, like less than 5 minutes. Let's see. All right. Where'd you go? All right, now I've got it. So Amber sent out the final copy of Chapter 6 last week so that you could provide any final comments on the chapter ahead of today's meeting. And when I presented the chapter, I kind of got like an informal thumbs up on the chapter, but we realized we should do a formal vote. So that's really what the goal is here. And this will be the same procedure for the other chapters moving forward. They'll be presented, and then we'll include any comments, fix the draft, and then call for the formal vote in another meeting. So I'll move the slide to the recommendations from this chapter, which there aren't many, there are just 4. We did receive some written comments this week. Most were questions and comments about like different trends that were in the data section. And I replied to those through email. And I used some of those comments to kind of clarify the text on those figures to make sure that they were a little easier to understand. We did receive one comment about the curbside battery collections that I wasn't able to respond to yet, and Brian wanted to reply to it, but he's not here tonight. But our recommendations are the same. We'll just be able to reach out outside of this meeting and alleviate any of those concerns on the batteries, on the battery project. So these are the 4 recommendations. I'll just read them off really quickly and pass it off to vote yay or nay. So we'd like to implement a satellite battery recycling program. We'd like to assess the feasibility of collecting small quantity generator dangerous waste at our household hazardous waste facilities and then implement those collections if we see we need to. And we need to evaluate accessibility and participation at the facilities and expand days and hours of operation. So I can now pass it off to a vote.
All right. Thanks for kind of that quick little overview of our findings from Chapter 6. And I will make a motion to approve Chapter 6, Hazardous Waste, as presented. Can I get a second?
I'd second.
Thanks, Joe. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Not hearing any. The motion carries.
Excellent.
Thanks, Jessica.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Now we're on to part five of our agenda. Ownership recommendation, the part that I'm really here for and excited about. So I'll turn it over to Doug, and Doug can give us thoughts on the ownership of our transfer sites.
Sure.
Hi, Doug.
How are you doing? Let me share my screen here. Everybody see it?
Yep.
Okay. So, little background. Brian was going to do this background, but I guess I'll cover that. The ownership of the facilities is an element of the regional solid waste system plan. It was part of doing that work, which has been ongoing. We're in phase two now. So tonight, I'm going to go through the background a little bit. The evaluation of the public-private ownership options have been ongoing. Some of the information has already been utilized by the city and the county for evaluating options for the negotiation phase. But I don't think this has ever been presented. The findings of the phase one have been presented. So so this effort is to reveal the information for that, for your consideration of phase one, which was the evaluation of private versus public ownership and operations. And today I'm just going to cover overview of this. You're going to get a copy of a full chapter or a task memorandum that was prepared that will have all this information. And then in phase two of the regional solid waste system, which we just are in the process of wrapping up, we looked at the options for public ownership. What is permissible under state law, and what are those options, and what seemed the most promising for consideration. So as you know, this is part of the original solid waste system study that we were doing, talk about the governance options, and certainly answer any questions that you have. You may have some questions during the presentation. I have about 15 minutes of presentation, but I think we allowed it about 30 minutes for this. So if there's some questions during the presentation, I think it would be reasonable to ask them as long as we don't get too far off. But again, let me remind you that after this presentation, you're going to get a full task memorandum that we prepared. I think the county's doing some final edits before it gets released. So with that, let me proceed. A little background. I think most of you have heard this, but just to remind everybody, you know, the transfer station system was built back in 92 for the Columbia Resource Company, primarily the West Van facility, and the central transfer stations were built and operational by 1995. And have been in service for that period. As part of that original agreement, there was a condition to consider the option of buying the facilities for $1 each. The idea, as I understand, was once the facilities were paid for, the county wished to have that flexibility to possibly purchase them. The contract moved on until 2006, which was at that time extended. The extension was awarded. The extension was built, you know, primarily built upon the need to build the Washougal transfer station. And as a result, the purchase option was extended through that agreement. The Washougal station came online, I think, 2009. Part of that agreement also allowed for some flexibility for the city to have the first option to purchase that facility if that condition was exercised. So all of this information is still in the current contract. As that contract was starting to go forward with the extension till 2026, the county decided to move forward with the regional solid waste system study. And in that was to complete a full condition assessment of the transfer stations and at the same time produce an evaluation of the options. So many of you have been involved with this. I know this study's taken place over extended period, part of it because of COVID, part of it is because of the negotiations. But in the past, we did a review of the assessment of the conditions of the facilities, whereas, the physical buildings themselves are in pretty good shape. You know, the fact of the matter is there's going to have to be some large expenditures to accommodate the traffic and increased volumes that have occurred, plus the new conditions of expansion. I mean, Clark County is still one of the fastest growing counties in the state. So with considering that, I think our number in the preliminary study in phase one was possibly over the next 10 years, around $50 million will have to be invested in these facilities to accommodate improvements. So that's a little bit of the highlights of the background. In the phase one study, we took a high ranking or high level analysis of what are the options. Certainly one option is to continue the private ownership and operations that is currently in place. A second option was if the public, Clark County or the public would own them, and still have private operations. So that's, a condition. Many facilities or many places in the state have that situation, as well as in the case of the private ownership and operations. So, places have that system also. Then there's public ownership with limited public operations. Example be parts of Clark or Marion County, Salem. They own some of the facilities, but they also, some of the facilities are publicly or privately owned, but the county runs the scale houses. So that's another example. And then there's the example of public ownership and operation. An example of that would be the city of Seattle. They own and operate those facilities. So the reality is there's a variety of options, it depends on, what are the needs of each of those communities, how they wish to operate. So
hey Doug,
yeah,
can you go back one slide? Sorry, can you explain option three? I'm still a little bit unclear on what limited public operations of the scale house or how that would work in our system. I guess I'm not quite clear on what that is. Option three.
Well, instead of contracting out all operations, you would run the public agency would run the scale house. They would operate that. Once the vehicles get onto the site, the operation of the transfer station itself, the transporting and everything would be contract.
Okay, so the county or the government agency is running just the scale house, and then the contractor, private contractor, would be running like the compacting and the machinery, yes, and all that stuff with inside the MRF itself.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
And the idea is that they control the money. I guess that would be the case. Some places have done that. But they don't want to get into full operations.
I wasn't really picturing what that would look like in my mind, but thanks. That clarification helps a lot.
There could be other options to that. You could run the scale house and the recycling facilities. I mean, you could do other services depending on how you wanted to cut the cake, so to speak. Mm-hmm.
Sorry, Doug, that was going to be my little interjection there was, yeah, at least the way my mind works is that it can be as broad or as narrow as we necessarily want, whether it's, how much we want the county or the public involvement in that. Yeah.
That's correct. That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
So in the report, we have done again, it's very objective. Many communities operate in each of these scenarios, and they choose to operate them based on their situations. So there's no exact right way to do it. It's what fits your situation and what works best for your community and what your needs are. The criteria or the factors that we used, and you'll see it in the report, to evaluate or to compare the alternatives were looking at capital funding and, again, evaluating, the ability to control the money on what capital improvements are done, when they're done, and have that control over that. And that's, a question of what role the county or the public agency would want. Again, a key factor in the case of Clark County system is you've got a lot of capital investments to make over the next 10 years. So span of control, that is the ability to decide on making decisions on the level of services, things like adding services from your service, you're doing your solid waste plan. One of the things that's going to happen is there's going to be more organics of the food waste. So the ability of you to make adjustments to those kind of factors, if you're contracting it, you have to negotiate that typically. If you're owning it, you have to provide for that change in service. So those kinds of things were evaluated. The management experience, what is the ability to manage and administer the services provided, what comes with that when you, under the different alternatives, ownership risk, what risk do you, come with the ownership and, what risk can be then also transferred in the operations contracts or whatever. So ownership risk, contracting of services, what control can be delegated, and what is acceptable to you as under the public owned system. And then regulatory options. Again, we brought up the idea of, the thing, I've been in this industry over 45 years, and there's only one thing I could say. It's solid waste is one of the most regulated industries, and there's always changes. And as Julie mentioned, the state passed their food waste program, so one of the things that will be probably addressed in the solid waste place is how's food waste going to be managed in the current system? And what's the ability to control and implement the services that you need to address those kinds of ever changing regulations? So these are I'm just bringing up examples to think about. They're discussed in the report. And we listed out the advantage and disadvantage to each of those options for you to look at. So, like I kind of jumped ahead here. The evaluation of options are presented, the advantage and disadvantages. And what we try to do is really contrast each option to the goals of meeting the management of the solid waste system. What comes with managing a solid waste system and how these factors come into play if you own them or if you don't own the facility and how you operate them.
Doug, can I ask a quick question?
You can ask as many questions as you wish.
as I look at this, the thing that strikes me is that under Waste Connections, we now have a professional group that is national in scope, that we have the benefit of their combined technology and all of their operations, and they apply it as they can here. And they also not only collect, but they, after sorting, they remarket as possible
the various elements of or contents of the waste. If it became a public managed and operated, where do we think we would, I guess a couple questions. One, where would we obtain the expertise to efficiently operate? Number two, how would if it's a publicly owned facility, then does that mean that the county is now going to be negotiating pulp prices or aluminum prices or whatever it is in the secondary market?
Well, first of all, on that aspect, just let me clarify the material recovery facility, and that I think the county is pretty clear that they do not want to get in that business. So, in terms of marketing materials, that's, I may be speaking out of turn, but Julie can jump in here. But I mean, I know that one of the options that's being considered is moving the MRF out and making it more private and changing that arrangement. I can't speak to any details of that, but it's the intent, or the one concept is that the MRF is moved out. So that, to deal with that. Now, getting to your other point, certainly if you publicly own it and you want to operate it, you would have to hire that expertise. Is it out there? Yes, it is. And you would have to hire it and develop that and bring that skill to bear. There's plenty of resources. On the other hand, you're absolutely correct. You have a firm like Waste Connections that's been doing a good job. And so, why would you want to change that? So those are the factors you got to weigh. The fact is that if you do publicly own it and contract it out, you can get both. So it's just how you want to do it and what level of control you want. So I'm not here to promote anyone. I have my professional, I've worked under both systems, private and public. So, like I say, we tried to be objective in looking at it, and there's a lot of factors to consider.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And the only thing an observation is that it really boils down to profitability depending upon the choice that you make and how much the county would benefit by either A, managing it themselves, or B, continuing in a contract relationship like we have now. And the only thing I can say from the advisory commission standpoint is without access to those numbers and those projections, it's kind of hard to know which way to lean.
Well, again, there has been financial information developed as part of this. I don't know how much of that's been presented to you. So that's that. But you're right. Those are considerations.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Yeah. I do think when you look at this task report, I think you've been issued the original phase one report. You might want to go and look back at that. There's information in there that might help at least sort through some of this stuff. But your questions are well taken. So one of the things that evolved from this discussion with, and it, largely it's been somewhat internal, there was a meeting about a year ago, with the steering committee, and they got into this subject, and they did allude to some issues related to these guiding principles. But one of the guiding principles was establishing a regional agency, the county not being fully involved, but since there's multiple jurisdictions involved, establishing a regional agency might be that involved all incorporated area cities as well as the county would be a good model. It would be an independent entity with separate powers and authority. There's a leaning towards if there was an independent agency, instead of having a duly elected board, more on the order of appointed representation from elected officials from the participating jurisdictions. Certainly, the board would have the ability to, and authority to set rates and revenues. It'd be a fully enterprise fund or enterprise agency with the ability to issue revenue bonds to pay for capital investments. And the staff would be independent from the county and the participating cities. It would be an independent operating agency. With those guiding principles and looking at the options that are available, if it were to be considered public, a public agency, Washington provides for a variety of multi-jurisdictional organizations. One is an Interlocal Cooperation Act. Basically, that is a statute that allows two or three entities to get into agreement. They could have an agreement to build a road, build a sewer, but it's really a limited type of relation or limited board action. An example of this was the Spokane Regional Solid Waste Authority set up in the early 90s between the county and the city in Spokane, where they built the waste energy and they had some joint interests. So they had to form an interlocal agreement to execute that. And it's very flexible, but really the city in that case was the main controller, but there was representation from the board. But it has a very single purpose operation it's very different. The Joint Municipal Utility Services, the JMUS, is another one. That is very much a model that, if you're familiar with the Discovery Clean Water Alliance with Battleground, Ridgefield, and the county, that is a joint municipal utility service to run the northern part of the county's sewer system. And we'll talk a little more about that. Then you have the Metropolitan Municipal Corporation, which is really very much like your Clark County PUD or public utilities and your Clark Regional Wastewater. Those are duly elected boards that represent, and they're basically a regional utility. So they operate independent of the city and the counties, and they're directly elected. And there's other examples. And then there's a disposal district. Lewis County is an example. Mike Davis was part of that operation. It really disposal district sounds attractive, but when you really look at what it's built to do is really provide the opportunity for a county or a city that wants to commit their solid waste to a single facility and, making sure they have flow control to it. They set up a disposal district and largely a county there's a lead agency that's in control. The role of, say, the participating jurisdiction may be in approving some rates or in making certain capital investments. But largely the control is by the single agency, like a county. So those are all described in our phase two element, which we've combined into the phase one report for your reading.
Doug, yeah. I'm going to add to that district. Generally, the way it's written is the county commissioners or council just turns their hat around, similar to the health board. And they're the district commissioners. And so it's pretty limited in scope. And I don't think that was what we were being directed to look at here, but it's on the table because it is an option available. So that's why we're reviewing it with you.
Thanks, Mike. So the when we looked at that criteria, if proceeding with any kind of public ownership, the JMOS, the Joint Municipal Utility Service Organization, meets most of those guiding principles, which you should look at and review and comment on. But similar to the Discovery Clean Water Alliance, all the board members are elected officials appointed by each of the jurisdictions. So there's the City of Ridgefield, City of Battleground, the county, and Clark Regional, who's an independent entity, is also on the board. They operate the system because they're in the operation business. So they have a contract to do operations. But a joint municipal utility service has the ability to, they are an independent public utility. They can set all, you know, the revenues and rates, and they have the ability to own and operate, or they have the ability to contract out. They can own part of it. We've worked with some multi-jurisdictionals in other states that are very similar. In some cases, they do contract maybe to a county or city for personnel services or human resources, but largely they'll operate independently and hire their staff and contract out operations or elements of their business that they feel is the best model. So it has the flexibility of that. And it can raise it has the authority to raise revenues through bonds and with the pledge of the rates. So this is all laid out for these options. The reason it's before you coming from the regional from the regional study is we need your input. The county needs your input on this. It's intended so that we can move forward with the solid waste plan, so that the direction you can give can feed into the solid waste plan as we develop it. Not all the decisions have to be made, but maybe some direction has to be formulated. As it stands now, based on preliminary discussions, and these are preliminary, it seems that the joint municipal utility service is the best approach to proceed with. What would be a part of our phase two work, we could proceed with developing a business plan which would provide the mission, goals, organization, responsibilities, and staffing and financing for the operation, which really has a good purpose because whether you moved ahead with that option or not, a business plan would be good considering what's ahead of the solid waste system in terms of building new infrastructure and all the challenges that come with that. And then the next step would be if that business plan was accepted to draft up some form of memorandum of understanding, which could be available for review and possibly execute. I looked back at the Discovery Alliance timetable. I don't know how many people there are familiar with them. I can't remember what year it was started, but it took them about 3 to 5 years to implement that organization. So with that, more questions.
So I have another kind of statement on this is that we still need to shop this out to the Regional System Steering Committee, which is the Public Works Director. So you guys are seeing this high level presentation, and it may change a bit once we talk to them as well. But this was, as Doug had mentioned early on, this was sort of the direction we got from them, and it's sort of led us to this spot. And we want to keep this rolling because, as Doug said, it's a long, hard slog to take this one down the road. But the recommendations in the plan are going to be fairly high level at this point. and we'll continue to move on with the in the regional system study and narrow down what that business plan might need to contain. So there's going to be more work coming out of the study over the next 6 months, but we definitely need to keep the plan. And this is going to be, I believe, part of Chapter 1 administration. And we're going to need to get that buttoned up sooner than later. So that's kind of where we're heading with this. So questions for Doug or I?
My question would be, I guess, is like, so you've made this sort of high level recommendation on a sort of entity for ownership of the transfer sites. But we have a shorter time frame on getting the solid waste management plan. I'm kind of a little bit confused on how those two tie together. And would the solid waste management plan basically then direct this project moving forward? Does that make sense? Or
yeah, that's kind of where we're heading, is like a very high level. The ownership option was in the 215 plan. We've taken the next step further, which is to kind of, okay, here's sort of the model that we need to explore more. And that's kind of where, given the short timeline we have to complete the plan, that's kind of what we're looking for. But we still, like I said, need to shop this out to the cities and through the steering committee. Then they can take it back to their council, and I'm sure we'll get plenty of comments.
Okay, that makes sense. So basically, the solid waste management plan would basically then, we're proposing direct further study of this joint ownership model.
Correct.
Okay, thanks, Mike. Oh, when will we see the full chapter of, I guess we're calling it Chapter 1, administrative, when will that be sent out to SWAC for review?
Brian was going to present that in the next segment. And since he's not here, I don't have access to that. But we've got some work to do with that still. Doug, do you have any idea about what that timeline is?
Well, he was going to cover the schedule. We want to do, Kyle, or this was move forward so that you can review the task memorandum. And then he was going to develop that. So you have this background. And then the schedule, as I recall it, is at the next meeting they would make a presentation, but you would have the value of this report. So I know that we've got all the draft comments in. I suggest, I don't know, Mike, is it your guys' intent to get this out like to the SWAC, like early next week?
I hesitate to answer that without Brian in the room, but I think that later is what the plan has been.
So the intent is that you have this background information so that when you get the Chapter 1, there'll be language in there and discussion, and you'll have this benefit of this information.
That sounds good. I just want to make sure that I'm getting all the information I need to give a recommendation.
Question, Kyle, was Tim just not available tonight?
What's that?
Tim Kraft, was he not available?
Oh, yeah, he was not available. He didn't say why, but, yeah, he wasn't able to make tonight's meeting, unfortunately.
Yeah, Tim has expressed a lot of interest in this subject, so that's why I was kind of surprised.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of unfortunate timing, I think, for him. But, yeah, it's been kind of an issue, I know, for a long time on SWAC, and a lot of people have been interested in this ownership. And I wasn't joking when I said at the beginning, this is the part that I'm interested in and seeing what we're proposing moving forward, because it's obviously going to be a huge change to how we've been doing business for the last 30-plus years or so. So,
yeah, it's definitely
interest, I think, everyone on SWAC. I don't want to speak for everyone, but to me, it's like, okay, this could be substantial changes in how we do business going forward. So
Yeah, and it has obviously taken longer than I anticipated to get this to you, but we're real close now, so soon to come.
All right, that's what I like to hear. Forward progress, slow march, that's all right, as long as it's forward. Do we have any other questions?
Can I offer some input to support what Mike was sharing? Just for context, maybe what Doug had mentioned and what Mike had echoed is some of this is just framing of what role should local government play and our public agencies that are served by our regional transfer system. And think back to the first slide where Doug mentioned the history behind previous agreements with our relationships with the current or former private owners and operators of the transfer station systems and the ones that were built. Is there's a strong history of public-private relationship and partnership, but the clear intent to own for a public entity or public agency to own the transfer stations is not necessarily a new thought or concept. As Mike noted, it's in the current solid waste management plan. So hopefully not too historic of a shift in philosophy, but more of contextually like time to develop and understand and research further the right agent, the right governing structure, if that makes sense. And I see SWAC being given more information. I think the previous regional system study phase one report that Doug mentions does touch on that. So it's a good refresher before you read the ownership chapter. But hopefully that context still like the we're consistent historically with the previous iterations of assuming ownership of a transfer system at some point for the benefit of the long-term solid waste need that we know we're always going to have, if you will. We're not ever going to not need a solid waste transfer station in our region.
That is definitely true. We will always be producing solid waste, I think.
That helps a little bit.
Yeah, that does make sense about like, yeah, this has been a long-term sort of process with that agreement, you know, going back 30 years about the ownership transfer being in there. So that does provide some context that this isn't necessarily a new idea, but it's kind of actually coming to formation, I guess, so to speak. So anyone else have any questions for Doug or Mike? Not seeing any. I was going to say, Amber, is it possible to re-up somehow that regional system study phase one to the SWAC just so I'm having not read it in a long time and not had access to it, is it possible we could resend that out to SWAC to provide that context we were talking about?
I have made myself a note of that and should be getting that to you with any luck tomorrow.
Okay, that would be great. So we can have that, and then we'll be looking for what were you labeling this task memorandum? Is that what it is, Doug, or what's it specifically?
Yeah, I call it. It goes back to our original contract. It was called Task 7. It was actually going to be a chapter in this study, but it got delayed. So we went ahead and published the Phase 1 report without this information. It was still under development. So we didn't want to hold it up. So this is actually part of that study, but it just became a separate task. That's all.
Yeah, it's a technical memorandum is what it's titled.
Okay. So we'll be looking at that for when Brian has that kind of wrapped up and ready to within his schedule to get to SWAC. So, all right. Not seeing any
further.
Yep. Thanks, Doug. Appreciate it. We had next the presentation schedule, but since Brian unfortunately had to cancel, we're going to move past agenda 6 and move to our last item, which is other business or good of the order. So if anyone has anything to interject or would like to discuss, now would be the time. No good of the order from anybody? I'll go with something. I had a used electronic toothbrush the other day, and I'm like, what do I do with this thing? Battery sealed inside it. So Google it real quick. Oral-B has a plan where you can send them used toothbrushes, plastic, you know, floss things, and they'll give you a free shipping label. You can send it to them, and they'll recycle it for you. So just something cool that I found in the recycling realm when I was trying to get rid of a dead electric toothbrush. Anyone else give the order? I got a thumbs up at least. Thanks.
Kyle, we'll add that to our recycling agency directory.
Okay. Yeah, so, I was like, what do I do with this thing? There's a mail-in program, so that's good. That some producer responsibility, too, because I know we're big on that, too. So I appreciated that from them. So
surprisingly, I got that same question in our household not too long ago, and I didn't know.
See, I'm glad I'm spreading the gospel of recycling of old dental products. So there we go.
Well, in the spirit of that news, I'll just share that we've been informed that Washington State University has developed a capstone program, and they're working with our Waste Connections folks and their network addressing the primary focus is going to be on lithium batteries, but then they're going to kind of look at the battery universe as a whole, and hopefully we'll be learning some interesting observations from that engineering team. But compliments to Derek and also to the network of people that are in his scheme of treating these materials, because from that there are two internships that have surfaced for our state university students. So anyway, it's an interesting topic, and hopefully we'll get some useful information from them.
Yeah, I know you've been working really hard on that, Mike, so good job on getting some internships going and making some connections between the public-private world. That's always a great thing, especially for our university students, so I appreciate your efforts on that. Anyone else? Good of the order? Motion to adjourn, then?
All in favor, I guess.
Motion. All right. Aye.
Yep.
All right. Everybody, thank you guys again for coming. I appreciate it. And we will see you in about a month. Thanks.
Thanks, guys. We'll see you later.